Osmatantes from Hermatantes from Brazil from 1968. So you've been listening to Sunny Road. Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure to be here. I'll see you next week. Here's No Fixed Address.
Got enough?
Local music, independent voices.
Politics, polka, and punk.
Hip-hop and hoot.
It's all here. CKUW 95.9 FM,
homegrown in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Archives of your favorite local programming are available online at ckuw.ca/schedule.
Good morning, and if it's Friday at 11, you're listening to CKOW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. You're listening to Of No Fixed Address with your host, Al, and it's going to be a really nice day today. High of 30, but it's 23 degrees right now, which is about for me. It's, you know, I prefer 18 to 20, but 23 is a nice day for most folks. But if you got to spend time out there, 24/7 is not a great day all the time. But and today I have a special guest on today. We've been hitting and missing for a few weeks, but that's community radio, and that's just the way it goes. But we're talking to Jeremy. How do you pronounce the last name, Jeremy Zare?
Zare.
Zare, yeah.
Right.
Speaking today to Jeremy Zare from Inner City Youth Alive in the North End. And you know, we don't speak enough on the show about youth homelessness or youth in jeopardy. And I think it's really important to have you on today. How are you doing today there, Jeremy?
I'm doing pretty good today, Al. Yeah, today is a good day. How about you?
It's good. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, what I usually do on the show is ask my guest to, you know, give a brief bio or a brief history of what you're comfortable sharing and how you maybe got to the position you are today and why it's important what you're doing there.
Sure. Yeah, so I've lived and worked in the North End for about North End of Winnipeg here for about 15 years. And when I was a young adult, just coming out of university, there was just a real sense of a kind of what I say was a heart call mm-hmm. to the community here mm-hmm. in the North End.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been there ever since. And so it's looked different over the years, but I've lived in the community. So what I like to say is I'm first and foremost a neighbor mm-hmm. in our community, and mm-hmm. then I've had opportunities to work vocationally as well in the mm-hmm. community in a couple different capacities. And so most recently that would be the last 8 years I've been able to work with Inner Cities Alive mm-hmm. With our community ministry team.
Awesome. Well, what is the community ministry team? I was just looking down on your website and looking over some of the programs you have, and this is one of them, obviously.
Yeah, so the majority of our programming and work in the community mm-hmm. is with kids and youth.
Right.
But our community ministry team formed maybe before I was there, maybe 15 or 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Out of a need to reach further than just the youth and kids. And so this helps our organization to expand further to a lot of young adult mm-hmm. families in mm-hmm. our community.
Awesome.
And so our community ministry team gets to walk alongside folks in our community through relationships
mm-hmm.
and supporting them in whatever ways are relevant. But we try our best to work out of an approach of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we realize that a lot of times, you know, people are in need and so they're coming for help.
Mm-hmm.
So to say it's a fully mutual friendship is hard to say for sure it is, but we do seek to create relationships that reflect a friendship nature.
Yes.
That we can walk alongside people for a long period of time.
That's really good because, you know, I think one of the big, well, I know one of the big issues out there is trust. And you know, you have to have those relationships in the community to have that. Have you found that it sometimes takes a while to get people to come around?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, trust is a huge thing to have when building any relationship.
Yes.
But when we're in a helping profession, so in a helping role, trust is just essential. And I found, and I mean, you probably know this too, but like we find that in our community, a lot of our folks, our friends, our neighbors, mm-hmm. people in the neighborhood, they've grown up in a way where they've learned not to trust both systems
yep.
and people in power.
Mm-hmm.
And so even us as an organization, mm-hmm. even though we're not a social worker, we're not
yep.
A cop, but if I come, you know, to meet somebody, I might look like that
mm-hmm.
to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be very cautious.
Yeah, many times, so, just the perception of authority creates issues because there's, you know, as we know, there's a lot of discrimination around it. And is this person that's coming, you know, to talk to me right now, is he one of those people that may be exercising discrimination against me?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've come to expect that if I'm going to meet a parent or a family member going to a house for the first time, say I'm meeting somebody new, or I'm going to introduce myself to the family of a young adult that I'm mentoring or something like I come to expect that they're either going to think I'm a cop or a social worker because I'm white, I'm middle class, and that just is what the kind of what they're expecting. And so I know it takes time to trust and to build trust. So I have to go in with that expectation.
Yeah. Does your organization deal with youth exiting Child and Family Services youth in precarious situations?
Yes, we do. And so we see that with youth for sure who are in CFS or who have been recently transitioning from CFS to, independent.
Yes, yep.
And one of the areas that I focus on, one of our programs we have is supporting youth in and coming out of the justice system.
Yes.
And so we've seen that there as well.
That's a huge issue.
The justice system and CFS are often intertwined there with that. And so we've seen a number of times where youth are aging out at 18 and then they're cut off from CFS. Mm-hmm. And then, one example was a few years ago, one of the guys that we were connecting with at MYC at the Manitoba Youth Center.
Yep.
He was about ready to be released, and he was turning 18 at the exact same time.
Mm.
And he was going to be released. He had nowhere to go. He couldn't go stay with any family. Weren't able to stay with them. Mm-hmm. And his only option was to go to Booth Center downtown.
Right.
And that's an 18-year-old.
That's tough. That's tough.
Youth, right. So yeah, we do see that, and you can just see how that is a big challenge.
Oh, for sure. You know, and I know all about the Booth Center, and now Hope Center, but, after myself spending 14 and a half months on the street, I spent the next 14 and a half months in Salvation Army. It is a tough place to reside, and for kids it's even tougher when they're just learning the ropes and maybe haven't quite got it all together yet. It was traumatic for me because there's a lot of violence that goes on there, and for a 18-year-old, I can't imagine how tough that would be. It's Salvation Army does great work, but sometimes there are pieces missing, for example, I got one time a guy was beating up his girlfriend in the dining room, so I went to the front and reported it. Next thing I knew, I had two broken ribs and I got attacked from behind. And another guy was stoned on something, jumped off a second story or mezzanine balcony and landed on my shoulder and dislocated my shoulder. For me, even Salvation Army was not a good place, but I can imagine how tough it is for a person that's just coming out of adolescence. It's got to be tough. I see that one of the things you do is that Inner City Youth Alive does. I see that you have youth camps. You want to talk about that for a little while?
Sure. Yeah, in the summertime we definitely ramp up our programming and connection with kids and youth, and that comes primarily through our city day camps.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we're having city day camps. I don't work directly with these programs,
right,
but our organization itself it definitely puts a lot of time and effort into that. And so we have each week we sign up a group of probably 30 or 40 kids and from ages 5 to 12,
okay.
And that's our day camps. And they come for a day at Inner City, do some programming there, and then they always go out and do an activity, whether it's the zoo or go out to Birdsville Park in the afternoon. So those kind of things. And then we have our Gem Lake Wilderness Camp as well.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Yes.
Yeah, that's where we take out youth. That one starts at age 10, I believe, not the younger one, because they're going overnight. So 10 up to 19, different age groups each week, and then they go out there for about 4 or 5 days to Nopamine Provincial Park. So it's about a 3-hour drive.
Right.
The kids and the staff get to take a boat out to an island where they have these off the grid cabins and where they stay and they swim and they fish and they campfire and they have good connection time. They get to be in nature. And so it's often a highlight for a lot of the youth.
Oh, I'm sure.
All these kids and youth, too, that are going out are kids and youth that are connected to our drop-ins during the year.
Yeah.
So this is an ongoing relationship-building process that we try to focus on at Inner City Youth Alive.
And again, I think anything that builds, you know, that builds positivity is you know, can go a very long way. Because you know, a lot, you know, poverty is just as traumatic as homelessness, and you know, the area there that you operate in there there are a lot of folks living in poverty there, and it's and the kids really suffer from that as well, and so it's you know, so what you do with a thing like the Wilderness Camp is really, really important, again, to build people up and build build community and that relationship that is so much needed, especially in the area over there. Again, you mentioned the drop-in. Yeah, I see you have something called the Bridge Drop-In.
Yeah, so that would be our evening drop-in program that we run with different nights, different ages, but the range goes from ages 5 to 19. Different ages throughout the week, age groups throughout the week. And so those are our drop-in programs throughout the year. So throughout the whole year, we have those. And that would be what we would kind of see as our kind of our ground level program that kids and youth can come to and get to know us. And so oftentimes kids will bring their friends, and then that's kind of word of mouth that spreads that way. And that's where the staff and volunteers start to get to know kids, youth, and families in our community. It's kind of like it's a main entry point, I would say, into building relationships with folks in our community. And that's been our organization's programming for 35 years. And so so that would be like these kids now have parents and aunts and uncles who grew up in those drop-ins, right? And so that's a generational thing that is now quite well known in the community. And so you know, we're grateful for that. That's been able to build over the years, and hopefully that's been given us a good name in the community with families and kids.
I'm sure.
And one of the other neat things we have in our drop-ins as well as in our camps is that we have opportunities for youth that are at a place where they can step into a volunteer or a staff role. So our youth leadership program in the community helps youth to build skills and to step into roles where they can then help their community as well. And so any given summer we have probably anywhere from, I don't know, my guess would be 10 to 15 young youth that are working with our kids programs from the community. And so that is also something that we realize is essential for
it is
development within our own community.
It is, and you know, that's the one thing as a principal of experience, I really, really do appreciate what you're doing there with the kids, and it because you know, part of the thing about building strength and it is having somebody that's been through what you've been through and been through what you're living, being in a leadership or mentorship role, or being in a relationship, it's so vital. And you know, I preach on that every single day. But that's one thing I really, really do appreciate. It's so important to be able to bring people up who've been on the other side into leadership roles or into mentorship roles. I don't think there's anything more important than that. You know, for an organization like yours to do, and that's I'm really happy to see the insight that you have there.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it is essential, and it's about part of it's about empowerment.
Yeah, it is 100%.
You want to empower the community, people who have grown up in hard situations in their own. This is their community for many of them, and so how do we empower our youth and families to kind of take a role in leading and helping others.
And every
it's so encouraging to youth when they see that they can do it. Mm-hmm. And many, you know, and you know, the majority of them can. It's just they don't necessarily know they can. And so to get that opportunity to do that and to see, hey, these kids actually look up to me and
entirely
positive impact on them.
Entirely. You know, empowerment is one of those very special words in my vocabulary, you know, coming from homelessness, and because that is what it takes to move a person forward. And, you know, that's what they are doing today in a youth leadership role will lead to better things in their adult life. And that just continues on. That's it's a continuum that happens when they take those roles early on in their journey.
Absolutely, I agree.
We're just going to take a 2-minute music break and station break. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. Hang on, folks. Hang on, Jeremy. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Back, you're listening to Of No Fixed Address right here on CKUW 95.9 FM, the community radio station at the University of Winnipeg. And today we have on Jeremy Zare from Inner City Youth Alive. And I'm really, really happy to have you on today, you know, to talk about the youth issue, because it's it can be so much generational, you know, the issues. Growing up in poverty and living in poverty all your entire life, or growing up with, you know, and experiencing homelessness and having that becoming generational. I think what you're doing is in a large part, you know, helping to prevent homelessness in many ways. I'm just looking at your screen here, and I'm looking at Meals for Kids. And as we know, as my producer Debbie was just saying, there's a lot of research going on that says that people, if kids don't get the right nutrition, they don't do as well as kids that do. And talk to me about the Meals for Kids program.
Yeah, so our Meals for Kids program started a number of years ago. I don't know exactly now, but a number of years ago, it was recognized that that was definitely a need, that the kids that were coming to our drop-ins and our program were needing. And so that program formed out of that. And so now today, these days, we are fortunate to be able to have, during the week, during our programming, to have three meals offered to kids who are coming to our programming. So in the summer, they'll come in to our day camp. They'll get breakfast in the morning to start, and then they'll do their activities in their during their day camp, and then they'll have lunch, and then that'll finish the day camp. But then in the evening, we have drop-ins, and then there's a full balanced meal that's served in our drop-ins as well to the youth coming to that. And so, you know, like just having that integrated into our programming is important, so that kids can come knowing that they can get, you know, a healthy meal. And in this last year, actually, our staff that are kind of running that program have done a really good job of really trying to emphasize the importance of the kids and youth sitting down and eating together as well. And so that being a piece of like connection, an opportunity to connect while you're eating.
And I
find that that is like eating food with people is one of the best ways to build a relationship, because we all, it's a basic need we all have. We all need to eat. And so it's an opportunity to sit down to share an activity together that's essential to our lives, and to spend time together. And so they're starting to do that more and emphasizing that more, which is really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really huge point, because, you know, kids meet other kids and develop relationships that can sometimes continue on for years. And you know, you see a lot. I always relate to homelessness. You always see a lot of you know, people experiencing homelessness walking from one place to another to get from one meal to another, and you know, that community is vital to people's well-being, and it just relates even 10 times as much for kids. You know, they may be very, very many times be isolated at home. And it's a way of mixing with the neighborhood. Thank you for having that that program in place. It's I think it's totally vital to the kids' well-being and moving forward. You have just so many interesting programs going on. Let's say for a second talk about the Indigenous Leadership Initiative.
Yeah, so that program started back in 2017 as there was, you know, for many years, we as an organization had recognized the need for more focus on like that empowering piece and supporting and funding our Indigenous leaders and staff. And so as a faith-based organization, our funding model over in the past has always been a frontline staff comes in, and if they're hired, they part of their role is to raise support through their networks, through their churches, through the community, and so that's kind of a bit of a traditional role, a model within the church parachurch ministry world, but we recognize that that was definitely missing the need of many of our local leaders and Indigenous leaders, because if those who have grown up in poverty, you don't have the networks where people are able to give extra from what they have.
No, for sure
and
not.
So that was a big gap. And clearly, we knew that, and we're like, well, how do we work with this? And you know. And so this was one way to kind of to work at that, so that there was this funding pot that then could go towards Indigenous staff, local leaders who otherwise wouldn't be able to reach out to their networks for funding to donate towards our organization in order for them to do their work. So It was really essential to close that gap. And since we've had that, our Indigenous staff numbers have gone up a lot.
Oh, excellent.
So, and that's what you want. That's what we want in our community, of course. So,
As you know, 85% of our homeless community are Indigenous, and that number even rises when it comes to poverty, especially in the north end of Winnipeg. And to have Indigenous leadership involved is really, really, really important. They know better the Indigenous things than we do as non-Indigenous folks, and I really appreciate the fact that you recognize that. As a faith-based organization, how do you find? Answer what you will or what you're comfortable with. How do you? I'm an old preacher's kid with a name like Weeb, so I know all about this kind of stuff. But how do you? How do you work in Indigenous spirituality with Christianity?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And that's a question that we talk about a lot, and it's important to talk about.
I'm sure.
Because that's a very real revitalization piece that's happening in our society, a very important piece for our Indigenous friends and neighbors. And so... For us as a faith-based organization, we have learned over the years. We've done a lot of learning from Indigenous leaders who have taught us the value and the sacredness of Indigenous traditions and culture. And so we do not discard any of the Indigenous teachings or ceremonies. We respect them, and some of our staff participate in them, right?
Sure. So, yes.
And different people have different comfort level.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. 100%.
Even our Indigenous staff, some of our Indigenous staff who are Christian, they may not be comfortable with certain ceremonies themselves, but some of them might be comfortable with that. But we see that our faith in Jesus does not need to detract from Indigenous culture and the values that Indigenous culture brings. And so, like, you can look at so many things in Indigenous culture, and this is what we've learned from our Indigenous friends and leaders in the faith world, that, you just look at the seven sacred teachings.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many similarities.
I was just going to say.
And Christian faith ethics. And so I think it's more important that we focus on the similarities anyways.
Yes.
Because there's so many of those that we can come together on.
Yep.
And most people, even most of the Indigenous traditional elders that I've heard speak are very gracious towards other faiths and are very accepting. And so, we as a Christian faith haven't always been that way, for sure.
Yeah, well, without a doubt.
But we want to be.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. You had about as good an answer as I've ever heard on that subject. what you said, struck me as the very same. There are so many similarities. And I think when you have those and you recognize that, you can work with individuals on that. I've talked to Tessa from Main Street, from Shalom, quite a bit on this, and she walks a very fine line over there as well. I really appreciate the fact that you're doing things, absolutely correct over there. That's just my opinion, but I do appreciate what you're doing there. For me, that's really, it was a really important question for me to ask.
Yeah, thanks for asking.
And I just saw the Story Studio. What is that all about?
Yeah, so our Story Studio is currently, unfortunately, not in operation.
Okay.
But it has been a ministry in the past when we've had the funding and the staff for it.
Of course.
But it has been a program in the past that has provided a space for community members to come in and share their stories. And so it could be story, it could be music.
Yep.
And when they would share their stories, we would, as the organization then would allow the individual to choose what they wanted to do with it. They could either keep it private and take a copy for themselves and their families.
Or put it on the website.
They could allow inner city to keep it on file just internally. Or if they wanted to, they could choose to put it on the Story Studio YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they have a choice in how to share that. And a lot of people are happy to share it, like, with everybody, right? And so to put it on YouTube. And so, that was the initiative there. And we're hopeful that we can reopen that again sometime.
That's really important. As a person with lived experience, I think telling those stories are vital to opening people's eyes on the need for both homelessness and poverty. And I don't think there's a lot more things that are as important. And this leads me to the question: is how are you funded?
Yeah, we are funded majority by individual donors.
Okay.
Actually, we do get a little bit of like funding through grants and stuff like that, but the vast majority is through individual funders and churches.
Okay.
So we kind of go to the different networks that the faith community network.
Yep.
It'd be like, I don't know the exact numbers between, you know, compared to Siloam Mission. They might have more government funding, but they would still have a certain amount that would be private.
Well, they have 25,000 private funders there, so I don't think that's too much.
So it'd be similar in that way, but I know that the majority of our funding is private charity donations.
For sure.
So that we rely on our donors for that, and that also means that those relationships with our donors are important.
Yep.
And so we try to share stories from our community
and,
in a way that are helpful to both our donors and to our community.
Mm-hmm. I see that you, are you having another radiothon this year?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, this will be our second year now having it. And I think we're hoping to have it annually. So that's coming up in August, I believe.
Awesome. And CGVN is SCHVN 95.1 FM. I think folks, if you have a chance to tune in to that, please. And also, I have a number here that people can phone to donate, and that is 582-8779. Is that still correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And also, is there a place where they can donate online as well? Or?
Absolutely. People can go to www.icya.ca. Mm-hmm. Very simple, icya.ca. And right on our website, you will be able to find our donate button there. And you can make donations there through a secure donation portal.
Appreciate it. I think that what you do is so vitally important, and it's in your, because child poverty is generational. It can be generational, and so many people have, once you're in it, it's so hard to get out. You have to get help to get out, and that's what you're doing there. And I did see. I think you may have talked about it, but the education engagement piece.
Yeah. Engage Education is a program that started, I think, about 4 years ago, and that was in direct response to the high levels of absenteeism in our community that have been around for a while and were only getting worse, especially leading up and in the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it would be categorized under, like, chronic absenteeism.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we're talking kids who haven't been in school for maybe a couple years. Like, every once in a while, I'll meet a family, and there's kids that are 10 or 12 and they haven't been in school for 2 years.
Wow.
And that's just like it, for those who probably, aren't in this,
that's serious,
or in this world, you wouldn't think that that's possible, but it actually is. For many different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But so the program seeks to connect with, engage with families, youth, and kids who are needing that support to either get back in school or to stay in school. Mm-hmm. And so it's a holistic approach to supporting the youth as the kids and their families to kind of help them take small steps toward getting back into school or kind of returning to that important piece of education.
Oh man, I can't. You know, I understand what you're saying about being absent for 2 years, but it's my goodness, in this day and age, that is so that's harsh, and it is so going backwards within our system. Man, that's it's almost devastating to have a child missing 2 years of school.
Yeah, and you know, somewhat like one of the kids that I one of the kids in a family that I've connected with in the last few years. Mm-hmm. I connect with him. I connect with his mom, and she's doing her best. She's doing her best to keep a roof over her kids' heads and food on the table.
Yep.
But the son, he's extremely anxious. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to leave the house. And so like that's one of the big barriers that they face. And so part of it is getting the supports and getting, you know, the increased kind of specialized, you know, support that he's going to need. Mm-hmm. In order to start getting back into school and to a rhythm that is going to be good for him.
Yes.
And so, you know, the pandemic, that social isolation piece hurt our community so much.
Oh yes.
Families and kids. Mm. And so, you know, like I think when schools shut down or when they went offline for a while,
some just continued.
That was hard for many families to get back after that.
Yes.
To kind of get them back into school. And I know schools themselves were you know, scraping by to work as best they could with their kids. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of schools were overwhelmed, and so then they weren't as able to track down all these kids and to do the extra work that it takes to get them back and keep them in school.
For sure. And the last thing we'll talk about here is Step Up Construction. Is that still in place?
It is, yes.
And I would find that would be such an empowering situation.
Yeah, so Step Up is one of our newest, most exciting programs. Mm-hmm. That has really grown over the last couple of years. And so it's a social enterprise.
Yes.
That employs young adults. Mm-hmm. In the North End community. And so it's basically an entry level into carpentry. And so it's a job skills training program, but the participants are getting paid. They have full-time work while they're learning on the job. And so we have, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's around 15 or so participants. Mm-hmm. That are in that program. And the goal of the program is to provide a safe space and a nurturing space. Mm-hmm. For these youth and young adults to develop those skills, job skills, carpentry skills, relationship skills, to be able to then move forward.
Sure.
in the workforce after they move on.
Really, really important. That's such an empowering project or program. My goodness. These are the types of things that make a difference in a person's life and set a path forward. And you have so many great, great programs going there. It's hard to, you know, hard to imagine you doing all of this under one roof. But folks, if you if you got a few, I know things are tough, but if you got a few extra bucks in your pocket, maybe find a place to donate to Inner City Youth Alive, because you know, it's generational, and it's when you start feeding the youth, it has a really positive effect on their lives and on their families' lives. But I especially like the construction program. That's it's an amazing program. Do you have anything else to leave with our listeners before we sign off today?
Well, I, know, I just appreciate you, Al, and having you having this program. You know, like you having these conversations is important, especially around homelessness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I think many of us know that it's a really, really rough reality out mm-hmm. there regarding homelessness.
Yes.
For our, especially in the inner city communities. And so, you know, like, you know, I'm anyone who is able to engage with this topic and this reality and to see what they can do is helpful. And even though many people in society, you know, are maybe arm's length from homelessness, mm-hmm. like if you have the time and the capacity to draw closer to those who are suffering in this mm-hmm. way mm-hmm. in our community, it's huge. And relationship is huge. And once people feel known and cared about, mm-hmm. it makes a difference. And so whether that's a little thing of donating money or donating time or mm-hmm. or just, you know, treating someone with dignity and respect who's panhandling, like all those kind of things matter and make a difference. So
it really does. Thank you for saying that.
Listeners.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because respect, you know, respect is such a big important, and treating people like peers, that's so important. And just because people are going through a tough time in poverty and homelessness does not mean that they are less than you and I. And yeah, I really appreciate what you just said there. It matters a lot. And you know, people know when they're not being treated with respect when you speak to them. But thank you so much for coming on here today and talking about your point. I really want to keep in touch with you because you know, prior to, I have a friend at City Hall who's a friend of Andrew's, and she said get a hold of this guy and talk about inner city youth alive. And I put on a symposium each year, last 2 years, on human rights and poverty and homelessness, and I will be sure to include your group in my presentation next year, if that works for you.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Al. Thanks for having us on. We appreciate
it. You bet. Take care. And folks, give us one last time your website for donations.
Our website is www.icya.ca.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy, and I thank you so much for doing what you're doing in the community. It's so vitally important.
Thanks, Al. You take care.
You take care. Folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM right here at the University of Winnipeg, and of no fixed address. And, you know, man, it's... you know, we have not enough youth organizations. We have Ray down on Sherbrooke. We have Link on Stradbroke, and Inner City Youth Alive, and a few more. But there's just not enough organizations looking after the youth homelessness. And you know, we still have a problem with the province not having an exit strategy for youth coming out of child and family services. Yes, they raise the age from 18 to 22, but even at 22, are people really, really fundamentally strong enough to, you know, make the proper decisions on housing and all that kind of stuff? You know, I had to at the age of 19, but it's so tough. And please find a way, you know, at least connect with these folks, and there might be a place to volunteer there, because many times youth come out of child and family services end up on the street or in shelter on the doorsteps of Shalom, or, as he said, at Salvation Army. And there's just no great end to that story if, you know, they don't get help to escape the street. But folks, come back next week. We'll be off air, but we'll be playing an interesting archive show. In the week following, we will have both Debbie and my our federal MP on air for Winnipeg Center, and that's Leah Gazan. She'll be on air talking about, in all likelihood, poverty for one, because we live in the poorest postal code in the country, and number two, minimum income. which is one of her her pet projects and has been for years. So come on back next week. We'll put on something interesting for you, and in 2 weeks for Leah Gazan. Take care and be kind out there. Again, when you're going to Tim's, buy an extra water. Today, buy an extra water. And if you're going to Starbucks to buy a $5 cup of coffee, buy a $5 cooler for somebody else. And have a good week.
isn't there somewhere we can be alone? Isn't there somewhere we can be alone? Billy in the low ground, Billy by the sea, Billy in the back seat, just park it in the tree. Isn't there somewhere we can be alone? Isn't there somewhere we can be
myself.